Hello, welcome to the 5280 podcast. Strap on and have a good time.
From the Mobile 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Updates, special report. From the floor of Rocky Mountain Con, Smurf here with a legend, a man who has tiptoed into the galaxy far, far away, and the darker side. I mean, you've played with hell itself, haven't you?
I have been good guys, bad guys, heroes, and villains for 30 years now, so I've died.
30 years?
I've been acting. I'm old, child. I'm 57.
I would not have guessed that. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Doug Jones sitting next to me, who is aging better than me.
Oh, shit. Bless your heart for that. Thank you.
So you've been at the 30 years?
Yeah.
What was your first role? Because I was trying to retrace in my mind.
Yeah, I started doing TV commercials back in the late 80s.
Wow.
Mid 80s. And I was a TV commercials. One of the big campaign that got me noted as tall, skinny, goofy guy who moves well and wears crap on his face was the Mac Tonight campaign for McDonald's. When the clock strikes, hey, 6:30, babe. I was the guy in the moon head. Yeah. So crescent moon with sunglasses. And then from there, the referrals started coming for other creatures and aliens. You know, when a creature effects guy sees that you're 6'3½" with a long, skinny neck,
gives him something to
work with. 140 pounds. That's very easy to build on and without getting too bulky. I have a very small bone structure in my face as well. So I became a nice template to start building on for creature effects guys. So that's kind of how I got my reputation, I guess.
Wow. So in my radar, you were always around, but I think everyone notices you for Hellboy and being Abe. I mean, what was it? I mean, because the new film's coming. The gentleman from Stranger Things is playing, you know, Hellboy, and Ron Perlman I've interviewed and talked to. And
yes, Harbour.
Yes, David Harbour. And I always forget his name, and I feel so bad.
Yes. Yes,
and Ron Perlman's like, he's a good dude.
No, he's a delightful guy. I met David Harbour at Comic-Con this year. We passed each other on an escalator, screamed at each other, and then ran around to give hugs and do a selfie. No, it was really, really a lovely meeting. So, reboots are a part of Hollywood land,
right?
And they're a reality that I totally get. And Mike Mignola, the creator of the property, he wanted to do something fresh and new and different and restart, and that's fine. That's his property to do that with.
It is, and it's because I mean Ron is 73.
He's 10 years older than me. He's 67.
67.
And I'm 57.
And right? I mean, you guys aging brilliantly, but
you.
I don't. I guess at some point you're just like, I don't want to do this.
Well, you know, if we came back around to do a part three, he and I, we would be the oldest superhero team in history, I think. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Now, when you were growing up, were you into comics? Were you into the sci-fi and the horror stuff? Or
my comic books as a kid was more about the Archies and a hint of Superman and some Dick Tracy.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So some of the classic stuff.
Yeah.
I loved the Dick Tracy series.
I know.
Now that's classic villains right there. Mumbles. I just always just.
Right.
What's he saying? Who cares?
Who cares?
Now, so Hellboy comes. Did you enjoy playing Abe? Because it seemed like a lot of stuff on it.
Well, yeah. I played so many characters with a lot of rubber on my face and body. So Abe Sapien was no different than any of that. And he was just so beautiful and so well written, and he had such personality. I really fell in love with Abe. He was probably the most like me.
Is he your most memorable character that you can think of, or is there one that strikes a heartstring more?
Well, you know
more?
What? Honestly, he's in the handful of most memorable, but also Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus, my zombie character. It's that time of year again. It's October 1st now, so I'll be running on high rotation on the Freeform channel again this year in Hocus Pocus. that's become a Halloween classic movie for a good reason. It's timeless, and it's
aging well. It's not.
It really is.
Some of the 80s and early 90s films you just look at and it's like, oh, this does not stand up.
Yeah, and this one really lives on. Mm-hmm. And Billy's very endearing. He's a goofy zombie before zombies were cool.
Mm-hmm.
And
right in that gray area.
Yeah. And so I loved playing the Silver Surfer. He was the most stoic, beautiful, heroic thing I've ever played in my life. And I also I love the Fawn from Pan's Labyrinth.
Mm, that's right. I forget about that.
And the Pale Man was the bad guy in that. Mm-hmm. I played as well. But the Fawn was very, is he good, is he evil? We don't know. He was very kind of a trickster, and he was very interesting to play in Layered. I also the two new things that I have coming out right now, playing Saru on the new Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
He's extremely endearing to me. The writers have done a great job of like writing him to my particular strengths. So if I have any strengths, they found them.
This just highlights them. What's it like being in the Star Trek universe? I mean, there's always the battle, Star Trek versus Star Wars, and we were talking about it.
I'll never understand that battle. Why can't we enjoy both?
I know.
Yeah. If you like sci-fi, if you like space travel, then you can absolutely find things to love in both. Of course. I was born in 1960, so the original series was on network television when I was 6 years old.
Wow.
6, 7, 8.
Okay.
And so that's part of my life. And then Next Gen came, and then Deep Space Nine, Voyager. So I'm a channel flipper, so you can't flip channels and not land on something Star Trek-y. I've seen all the movies as well. But being an actor who wears lots of rubber on my face and body, the question has come up for 30 years, have you ever done anything in Star Trek?
Right.
And I'm like, well, no, sure haven't. I had kind of given up on that ever happening.
Right.
Now that I am 57, and how much longer do I want to wear rubber bits? I don't know. We'll find out. And I didn't know what Star Trek opportunities would be coming for me.
Well, and you don't know because the TV show, you know, gets announced last year. I mean, it's huge, hush-hush, and it didn't show up on my radar right away. I thought it was fan fiction. I thought someone was, you know, poking a joke.
There are a lot of fan movies made,
yes.
Right, as you know. So, but it's a for real deal. It's out, you know, just start, episodes 1 and 2 aired last week.
Mm-hmm.
And
episodes 3 is tonight.
Tonight. Yep. CBS All Access here in the U.S. And if you're in Canada, that would be Space Channel or Crave TV on Monday, cravetv.com. And if you're anywhere else in the world, in 188 other countries, it's on Netflix outside of North America. So many options.
So what's the premise of the character?
My character?
Yes.
Saru, I am a Kelpian, which is a brand new alien species to the Star Trek universe. Now, this is by the way, we take place 10 years before the original series, so...
Okay, because that's the other question.
Is, what happened to the Kelpians?
Yes.
We don't know yet.
So I was under the impression that this was after, like 100 years after Kirk, and it's that it was... So no one knows.
but we're before Kirk... We take place after Enterprise.
Okay.
Star Trek, and we're between Star Trek Enterprise and the original series.
Wow.
So I'm a Kelpian, and now Kelpians, we are a prey species on our planet. So I am the hunted, the herded, the farmed, the eaten, and being that my people are known as livestock. It is rather exceptional that I am the first of my kind to go through Starfleet Academy.
It's a precedent.
And to have worked my way up through Starfleet as a high-ranking officer on a starship.
Oh.
So that's extraordinary. And so getting the backstory as to how I did break away from the herd would be an interesting thing that we haven't discovered yet.
Wow. Because the costuming is great. I mean, the Klingons look... Holy
incredible.
Hell!
Incredible,
like we could have used that in the movies a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But then they're different in Kirk's era. So what? Where's that story going?
Yeah, the Klingons have been a huge talking point, and a point of contention too. Because some they don't look like Klingons that I know.
Yes,
you'll hear a lot. But now, if you remember, the first Klingons in the original series were like a mustache and some eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
So do you really want to go back to that?
Well,
that?
And it's funny because they mention that in DS9 when they go do the Tribble retake.
Yes, right.
And Worf's like, yeah, we don't talk about why and all of that. So they actually address it in DS9.
Yeah, why the ridges in the forehead now. And I've heard that there's a part of the folklore that something happened where the ridges were... No, there was a virus or a disease that caused them to not have ridges, I think.
Yeah, and it's so
that,
weird.
That was a disease Klingon.
the whole race is just diseased.
Yeah, I might be getting this wrong. So those out there who know the Star Trek canon, you'll know much better than I do.
Yeah, because I'm just trying to piece it all together going, God, how, where,
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
So what was it like working with Marvel? Silver Surfer, of course, iconic.
Yeah.
Character for me and probably a million other fans.
And for me, too. Like I said, the Silver Surfer, now I was not as familiar with him as a comic book character, so when I booked the role, I went to a comic book store, and I told the nice fellow behind the counter, what do you have for Silver Surfer? I just booked a movie and I got a study. He goes, oh my gosh! So he gave me a shelf full of things. And what I really ingested and absorbed was the original artwork by Jack Kirby and the original writing by Stan Lee. And he was just so beautifully put together. Those poses were so balletic,
mm-hmm.
and trying to find a way to move gracefully from one pose to another was my challenge to make him move on film for you. And also, in his dialogue in the comics were written so poetically and so, reflectively about the human condition and from an outsider's perspective. What are we doing to planet Earth? And
mm-hmm.
how are we treating each other? So Stan Lee has said that the Silver Surfer was his favorite character that he ever helped create because that was the character he could talk about. He could wax
the human condition.
Through.
Absolutely.
So that made it feel very special to me when I presented Stan Lee with a Lifetime Achievement Award at a film festival. It was the first time I ever met him. And so that's when he told me that little story.
Oh, wow.
So I heard it from his own mouth, and it made me quite, warm and fuzzy to know that
to hear it in the Stan Lee voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was my favorite one. You can talk like a poet through him. Yeah.
So, I love Stan.
Wow. So if you could play a Marvel character, if you could come back.
Another one?
Yeah.
No.
Who would you want to throw
when
in
I,
with?
When I was a kid, I would have loved to have played the Mr. Fantastic, the stretchy boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forgetting his real name now.
Reed Richards.
Reed Richards, thank you. That was because I was fascinated with his stretchiness in the cartoons on TV when I was a kid.
Right.
But, of course, Yoan Griffith played him in the movie that I was in.
Yes.
And I love Yoan so much.
Oh, and he's amazing because I was even watching that one show with ABC where he was like the immortal.
He was so good in that.
It was amazing.
It was a great show.
Well put together.
I was so sad it only lasted for two seasons maybe.
I think it was one or just
maybe,
two seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And John Hirsch was in it. And it was such a well put together show.
Yes.
And I think he was one of the best choices at the time for Reed Richards.
I would agree. Very dignified gentleman of a man he is.
Mm-hmm. But not to say you couldn't probably do better.
I don't know. I'm goofy and skinny and character-y looking, so I may not be able to pull it off, but
Reed does have that regal kind of, I know five other things that you couldn't even imagine right now.
Yeah. Now, there's another comic book character that I toyed with wanting to play maybe would be a DC Dark character called Deadman.
Yes, I do know Deadman.
And there was some talk that Guillermo del Toro might have wanted to direct a Deadman movie, and so I was kind of like, oh, I hope he remembers me.
Well, he does revisit the pool a lot from the people that he's worked with.
I just finished my sixth movie with him, which is The Shape of Water, which comes out in theaters December 8th.
Oh, wow.
It is a beautiful tale trailer's online.
Okay.
And it's been going gangbusters on the festival circuit. It won the Golden Lion at the Venice Film Festival. It just played it at TIFF, the Toronto Film Festival. It played at Telluride. And so anyway...
So it's done the rounds.
They're positioning this one. They're opening it December 8th on purpose because that's when all of the artistic films that are Oscar-worthy come out in theaters. So I think the placement of that is all telling of how good it is.
So is it in the vein of Del Toro with the creepy backdrops and the suspense? And
not
I mean,
as
what's
much.
What's the premise?
This is more of a slice of life from 1963, and I play a fishman mutant who has been captured in the wild, and I'm being studied at a U.S. government facility.
Oh, wow.
A secret test facility, and I'm kind of a one-off. That might be the last of my species. We don't know.
Right.
And meanwhile, Sally Hawkins, who plays the lead lady in the movie, she's a cleaning lady at the facility, and she kind of falls in love with me. So it's a tale of love with a Russian Cold War backdrop.
Wow.
And what ensues from there is rather exciting and rather romantic even, all at the same time.
It's wow.
It's a well-crafted, beautiful, artistic movie that Guillermo is back to his game he's good at.
His roots.
The critics have been saying it's the best thing they've seen of his since Pan's Labyrinth. So.
And the Pan's, I mean, just the intricacies and the creatures and the hand, I mean, that was just like.
I played him too.
Yes, you did. And I'm just like with the hands for the eyes and I'm just like, oh my God, that is just, his mind and how it works. I mean, when he's directing you on set, I mean, does he have like the vision there? Or do you guys work through it? Or how do you get to that magic?
Yeah. No, his vision is quite thought out ahead of time, and he'll have a sit down talk with me usually before every movie we do, and he'll give me like his bullet point notes about that character, which sometimes have been very few,
mm-hmm.
you know. But we have kind of a shorthand where he'll say one thing or two. In fact, for The Shape of Water, the movie coming out soon, as this fish man, he simply said. As far as character notes, he's a raw animal this time. He's not a flourished Doug Jones performance. He wants a real raw animal from the wild.
Oh.
And he said as far as physicality goes and stature and body language, he said, I want you to channel some Silver Surfer mixed with a matador and go. Right?
Wow.
So now
so a little savagery with the intellect and just... The reserve.
Yeah.
He's
an intelligent being. He's sentient, so he can communicate. He can learn communication. And you'll find that out through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
I can't wait to see this. And this is going to be December 8th. You said.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Theaters everywhere. Yeah.
That I'm at, and I love Del Toro because I Pacific Rim. I was so I loved that, and I keep hearing that there's going to be a sequel and all
there
of
is,
that,
yeah.
And I just keep. I'm like, when? Just give it, please.
I don't know. Yeah.
But let's face it, the man is busy.
He's the busiest human being I know ever.
So now, wrap this up. Back to Star Trek. Have you guys wrapped for the season, or
no,
do you have more work in front of you?
In the middle of filming episode 15, which is our final one for season one right now.
Wow.
So it's coming to a close soon.
So 15 episodes, normal, what's 27, 23 is a normal season?
Well, you know, this is new television. It's our shorter seasons.
Yeah,
right?
See, and that bothers me because I don't want it broken up. I want,
used to be 22, 23 episodes per season. So that was, you know, in the old network model. Now, Star Trek Discovery being made for a streaming service, it's a bigger budget per episode. It's about $10 million per episode.
Wow.
So that's something like making a movie every week.
That is.
So with that kind of a budget, they needed to do the streaming subscription platform, or it could never... My personal belief is that it may not be able to... Network television may not be able to carry something that expensive all the time.
No, I don't. I mean, the model for TV is almost as broken as retail. I mean, because everyone's going to binge watching, streaming, and shorter everything.
And our shorter season, though, is binge watchable. It will be because it's an ongoing arc of a story. It's a serialized piece, so it's not. Each episode is not a self-contained start, middle, and end story.
Oh, okay.
Each episode is a continuation of the bigger picture. So it's like a 15-part feature film.
Wow.
So, and you're getting all of the cinematic backdrop that comes with that feature film. That's why it's so expensive. It's best visual effects I've ever seen in a TV show ever. Costumes, sets are just like glorious and amazing to work with and work on. And the writers are really... They're really paying close attention. Our writing staff on Discovery is the smartest people I've ever worked with in my life. And we have some PhDs on the writing staff as well.
Oh, wow.
And they're Star Trek geeks, every one of them. they know the canon better than anybody else does.
Oh.
So they are really, really amazing. And they're paying very, very close attention and great care of the franchise and of the canon. So we're in very good hands.
It sounds like it. Now, my final question for you. We've asked this of everyone, and you will be the final person we ask of this question.
Okay.
Of the three people I'm about to name, which one do you think portrays or does the best villain?
Okay.
You have Tim Curry, Alan Rickman, and Christopher Walken. Now,
oh, gosh, they're all so brilliant. That's a hard one.
Now, I know there's gray areas as far as villainy and all of that, which everyone has brought up, but this has been our question that we have gone the entire year asking.
Okay, I got it.
You will be the final person.
I got it. And that would be, drumroll, Tim Curry. I am such a ginormous fan of his. And what he brings to a villain is a sense of humor and a sense of play.
And very
wit,
witty
and wit, absolutely. So yeah, he gives villains layers and colors that I would never find on my own. Yeah,
no, excellent answer. For the listeners at home, if they want to follow your exploits, what's the best way to keep in touch, keep a thumb on and pulse on everything?
On social media, on any platform, you can find me under the @ActorDougJones. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Tumblr.
Holy crap. How do you have time to... Is this what
Snapchat.
You do while you're sitting in the chair getting the makeup put on?
yes, exactly. So I'm Actor Doug Jones and all. And the Snapchat, that's a new one. The kids got me involved. Everyone who's, like under 25, like, you got to get on Snapchat, man.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Really?
Another thing on my phone?
One more thing I got to... So you can... social media can become a full-time job.
Yes, it is.
If you let it. So.
Yes.
But yes, you can follow my exploits there.
Excellent. Doug, thank you so much for sitting in with us. Because in the end, we're all stories, so make it a good one.